You're listening to Civic from the San Francisco Public Press. On this edition, we'll learn about a popular weed killer, glyphosate, and how Bay Area cities have responded to conflicting science about whether or not it poses health risks.
They changed the classification that they use for glyphosate to the most hazardous level and therefore requiring an annual review by all the groundskeepers in the various city departments to talk about the certain pesticides that are kind of on the restricted use list. And those are the ones that are considered at the highest hazard level. They have to come and justify, yeah, we'd like to use glyphosate, you know, for this purpose. And we've tried X other things and they haven't worked. And here's why we'd like the opportunity to use it.
I'm Laura Wenis, and this is Civic.
Civic is underwritten in part by the San Francisco Foundation, which has been acting as a catalyst for change to build strong communities, foster civic leadership, and promote philanthropy in the San Francisco Bay Area since 1948. More at sff.org.
Thousands of lawsuits have been filed against the maker of a weed killer, alleging that it causes cancer. Research is mixed on that. The results of various studies are somewhat split on whether glyphosate, the herbicide in the weed killer Roundup, is linked to cancer or other health concerns. In the Bay Area, where many of those lawsuits originated, cities have handled the question of whether to keep using glyphosate in public spaces very differently. This week, the San Francisco Public Press published two stories exploring what the science says and how cities have responded. Journalist Christy Cole, an independent reporter, talked with me about her work. First, can you give a general understanding of what glyphosate is? We know it's a weed killer, but it's in such widespread use. What does it do that other pesticides or weed removal methods don't?
The thing about glyphosate is it's a chemical. It's what's known as a broad spectrum herbicide, which means that it can be used across a large number of weeds. And it had been used a lot in agriculture, was its biggest use. Farmers today swear by it because it's a very effective weed killer. And even groundskeepers who do use it, you know, regard it as a very highly effective weed killer. It's come into more use in, say, the last 20 years when Monsanto, now Bayer, introduced its Roundup resistant seeds. So they started selling crop seeds, you know, for corn, all the big crops that we produce and that farmers across the world produce. And so what these things allowed the farmers to do when you were managing, you know, a big field or a set of big fields, many, many hectares of land, you know, it's certainly a labor saver and a money saver to be able to apply, you know, this one herbicide that kills these weeds but doesn't kill the crop plant, right?
Right.
And it allowed them to apply less overall, less chemicals. So in a way, it was seen as kind of a, you know, safer in that regard.
Yeah. Yeah. And what about just like the labor intensiveness of removing weeds in other ways, like mechanically, as groundskeepers, for example, might have to?
Well, I mean, even you think about San Francisco, how much open space, how much grassland exists here in the city, even though it's a compact city, 7x7 square. Imagine having to go through and weed by hand all of Golden Gate Park or all the medians in the city or McLaren Park. I mean, that's a fair amount of stooping over and being on your knees or squatting or however you want to do that. You could use a weed whacker, you know, which people do use. And the city does and has. I mean, I have actually hiked past goats munching on vegetation in years past. They do use, I mean, they use all sorts of things to weed. There are certain areas that are harder to do than others. So, I mean, we've talked about farmlands. We've talked about this. I mean, San Francisco is both a city and a county. And one of the things that the county of San Francisco maintains is the airport. And the airport has all these grass runways. And the Federal Aviation Administration, of course, has regulations about who and can be on a runway. And so, of course, you don't want groundskeepers with weed whackers on a runway when you have airplanes going back and forth or coming into land. I mean, you know, the visual of that in and of itself is enough. See, I mean, you're laughing. So, yeah. And that's it.
Well, okay, but these are like the grass, like medians or dividers or whatever between taxiways and runways. Not like the runways themselves are not grass.
Right. Yeah, no, we're not landing on. No,
but either way, you would have to have somebody out there like weed whacking the side of this grass strip,
right?
With a 747, like, hey man, I'd like to land there, please.
Yeah. So, yeah. So I mean, there are practical measures too.
Yes. So this seems fairly innocuous, actually. What got you started reporting on glyphosate use in San Francisco?
Well, there were these jury decisions that were coming about with respect to the relative safety of the use of Roundup, which contains glyphosate. And groundskeeper Dwayne Johnson, who worked for the Benicia Unified School District, had come down with non-Hodgkin's lymphoma. And he sued Monsanto. They're now owned by Bayer, but he sued Monsanto because his exposure to the chemical he was spraying a lot, he was what would be called, say, a heavy user, someone who was exposed to a lot of the chemical, you know, in his day-to-day mm-hmm. work. And he won. And then there were two other cases that were decided. And I started to look into what precipitated these lawsuits, which was a 2015 report by the cancer research arm, the IARC of the World Health Organization. And that one report, while not a super strong link, it said that there was enough, you know, animal evidence with a little bit of human data to back up the fact that there is a probable link between glyphosate and cancer. And that one paper set in motion a lot of other actions that took place in 2015 and in subsequent years. So it, for one, it made California, the state of California, its own Environmental Protection Office decided to place the chemical under Prop 65, or at least to look into it as a possible cancer-causing agent that would require employers that use this chemical that have 10 or more employees to have to offer safety trainings and safety equipment and all these things. It caused the city of San Francisco to change the way that it regulated the use of glyphosate-based herbicides, because up to 2015 and through 2015, San Francisco classified Roundup and those types of herbicides as ones that didn't require like an annual review for its use. You know, groundskeepers mm-hmm. didn't have to come in and justify why they were using it and why they needed to use it and why there were no other alternatives that they had exhausted first. You know, they had to exhaust other alternatives first. And so it started that process in motion. And then I saw that cities were starting to ban or put moratoriums on the use. And I thought, well, San Francisco doesn't ban the chemical. And I thought, you know, there are definite liabilities here. I mean, you know, Benicia and the Benicia Unified School District actually could have been, you know, you wonder why they weren't sued, you know. But of course, you know, part of it is you want to, you know, it's the maker of the product that has sold it to these places, to everybody, as being safe. And so, yeah, Dwayne Johnson and these other folks went after Monsanto for that.
So there are big players here. Monsanto is a big company. Bayer is an even bigger company. There's a lot of money in play here. Can you set the stage for exactly how big a deal these lawsuits are? Because you mentioned a couple lawsuits, but there are thousands of lawsuits filed against the maker of glyphosate, right? I mean, how big a deal is this?
Well, it's a very big deal. You know, certainly one of the bigger issues is the fact that, you know, not long before, well, I think it was like a couple of weeks or a month, I forget exactly the timing of that, but, you know, Bayer bought Monsanto, and then, you know, within a matter of weeks after that purchase, the decision against Dwayne Johnson came down. Which, of course, caused the stock price for Bayer to take a big hit. And so pretty much almost the entire time that Bayer has been in the process of acquiring Monsanto, it has been under a cloud of these lawsuits against this product, which is its flagship product.
And the tricky thing here is science doesn't seem to have a really direct answer as to how big the risk is of getting cancer from this product. I mean, you mentioned the cancer research arm of the World Health Organization that in 2015, word came out that they found a link. But what are some of the kind of big groups that say it may cause cancer, and who says that it actually doesn't?
Well, Monsanto says it doesn't. And they've done, I mean, the way that pesticides of any sort are regulated in the United States is that, you know, the companies themselves do studies on these chemicals, and then they submit them to the EPA. And then the EPA decides, you know, reviews the science that was done, among other factors, and decides whether or not to license a chemical for sale and to allow it to go on the market. And one of the things that was an issue that was not public at the time, but the trials themselves through discovery by the law firms and by Carrie Gillum, who is a pretty big reporter in all of this, she actually wrote a book called Whitewash, which sort of documents the history of Roundup glyphosate that Monsanto had developed. And she was able to, through the Freedom of Information Act, she got some information out. But a lot of the documents came out with discovery by the lawyers representing the several thousand people suing Monsanto. And these emails just sort of look at, you know, the ways in which the company tried to keep quiet, change the thinking within the EPA about the link between cancer and glyphosate. And so over time, you know, through a series of emails and other documents, you see the shift in the EPA turn to, yes, this is a safe product. So the EPA says that glyphosate is a safe product. There are a number of other international bodies, from the EPA of New Zealand to a similar body in veterinary medicine, I guess, in Australia, and Health Canada, and the EU itself. Their food safety program all come down on the side that glyphosate is safe to use.
Yeah, unfortunately, assessing the risk of a product like this isn't as easy as saying, yes, it causes cancer, or no, it doesn't cause cancer. I mean, researchers and regulators are both worried about how much exposure might be hazardous, not just whether it's hazardous or not, but like what degree of use is a hazard. You know, is something that has been sprayed with this pesticide and then becomes a food product, is that a hazard versus, you know, somebody who is working with it every day? And California actually has set a standard for that. What's that standard, and how did they get to it?
They're one of the few. You know, you hear these things about exposure levels to certain chemicals, you know, whether it's or exposures even to elements like lead and lead-based paint, right, are always put out in, say, parts per million, or the amount of arsenic levels in water. You know, we don't want to get above a certain level of parts. It's always couched in terms of parts per million. That sort of amount has not been applied, or at least in terms of glyphosate. So California determined that exposures above 1,100 micrograms per day were potentially harmful. That's more than anyone will eat. You know, it's more than what, you know, you or I will consume in a diet, you know, over my life, you know, over our lifetimes. But but you know, the fine, you know, the idea was to come up with some sort of limit. But you know, there are people who are looking into this who actually feel that that threshold should be in fact lower. But that's still now up for debate, and people are studying, because there is kind of a paucity of science around exposure levels. That was actually the big thing that kind of came out of the IARC report, which is the World Health Organization's cancer research body, was sort of the paucity of research around levels of human exposure, because there weren't that many epidemiological studies. They've been done in the past, you know, asking people to self-report about their exposure levels and issues. And of course, there are certain biases. And then whether, you know, were followed up with regularly, did they answer the same questions, you know, at each stage of those follow-ups. And so that makes it very hard to tell. And so, you know, the question is you know, what can we look to now, you know, in terms of human exposure?
Yeah. Yeah, and just to talk about that level a little bit more, I mean, you, like you say, that's 1,100 micrograms per day is way, way more than anybody who's just consuming a product that might at some point have been treated with glyphosate would consume. But what about people who work with it, who spray it on things, or who, I don't know in what ways it's applied other than spraying, but what about people who are actually tasked with applying it?
Yeah, they're the people who are most at risk, you know, in terms of, because they might be, you know, it depends on how they're spraying, you know, how they're applying it, I should say. You could have a tank on your back and be spraying it. You could be applying it, you know, San Francisco, for example, has several different ways they do it. They might be spraying it. They might have sort of what's like a paintbrush type of applicator that they use to paint it on specific weeds, which is some of what they do. They were telling me that they did out at like Bayview Hill when they're busy applying it around a set of weeds, you know, that surround an area of native grasses that they're trying to protect. So, it, you know, and that just sort of depends. But again, you know, then you look at someone like Dwayne Johnson. He was spraying it, and he was given, when you read through some of the testimony that he gave, you know, at times the tank, you know, the suit that he was given, you know, you're supposed to wear kind of a suit that seals you off, you know, protects your skin. But he ended up with lesions on his skin because sometimes the suits that he was, you know, given leaked. Yeah. And so there were, you know, there were issues like that. And so, you know, if you have someone who's applying it for long periods of time, you do have to wonder about their safety. And then as you kind of step back from that, you know, what's the level of exposure to someone who's just walking through maybe right after someone has sprayed? Okay, that might be a little bit higher than someone who a few days later is walking through an area that's been sprayed. You know, it's much lower. But we don't have, you know, studies of that. But, you know, there was a local firm that San Francisco actually did hire to look into this very issue. And, you know, they came up with a set of levels. And they said that basically the people who are in the greatest danger were those applying, inhaling or ingesting glyphosate via food contamination were sort of like the next greatest concerns. And then the casual contact from clothing that brushes vegetation sprayed with the herbicide was kind of the lowest level of concern.
I'm speaking with journalist Christy Cole about her reporting on how Bay Area cities are using the herbicide glyphosate, while the science on its potential health effects remains split. Knowing that there's disagreement about whether and how glyphosate might be harmful or linked to cancer, it does seem like we can say it's not definitively, for sure, completely safe. So public agencies have probably, you know, understandably struggled to figure out how best to handle the use of this stuff. And there's a thing in play here called the precautionary principle. What's that, and how does it apply to how public agencies make rules about the use of glyphosate?
Well, you know, there are different ways in which the precautionary principle is applied. I mean, you know, San Francisco passed its precautionary principle in the early 2000s and began using that Chris Geiger, who is with the Department of the Environment and sort of heads up its environmental kind of their integrated pest management system. He's the one who kind of developed that program for them. He said that San Francisco's decision to continue using glyphosate is totally fine, totally justified because, you know, San Francisco has reduced its use and it has, you know, enacted added measures in terms of training. They changed the classification that they use for glyphosate to the most hazardous level and therefore requiring an annual review by all the groundskeepers in the various city departments that use glyphosate. It's several departments. You know, it's the Department of Public Works, Parks and Rec, also the ports, as well as the Public Utilities Commission. You know, all these different agencies use it, and they have a meeting every July to talk about the certain pesticides that are kind of on the restricted use list, and those are the ones that are considered at the highest hazard level. And so they have to come and justify, yeah, we'd like to use glyphosate, you know, for this purpose. And we've tried X other things, you know, X number of other things, and they haven't worked. And here's why we'd like the opportunity to use it. There's public disclosure, and it's managed pretty consistently. The grounds managers and all these different departments have to file reports every month with the Department of the Environment that discuss in detail how much they've used, where they've used it, and at what concentration levels and so forth.
But it seems that there's also an element here of sort of sticking with the devil that you know. Because there's other pesticides out there, there's other weed killers out there. Do we know that something else that could be swapped in for glyphosate wouldn't be potentially worse if there is a risk associated?
Well, that's actually one of the things that Chris Geiger brought up. And as well, Amy Harrington, who's the mayor of Sonoma, whom I also talked to when I was looking around the Bay Area at different cities and what they were doing. You know, they didn't want to throw out this one thing that did have a purpose and did really work, and then adopt something else that they hadn't really looked into that would turn out to be, you know, more toxic for the people applying it and, you know, for the public and so forth. So yeah, I mean, they've done that. And I mean, over time, San Francisco has used, you know, a lot of different chemicals that they have phased out as they've learned more about them, whether it's dicamba, which is another weed killer made by Monsanto that, you know, has issues of, you know, hurting at least other plants and through drift and everything. And they over time, they phase that out. And, you know, they have come in with other weed killers like quinclorac and others that are not, you know, don't have as big a toxic profile. You know, they're tier one or tier two, you know, the lower tiers that don't require are not considered as hazardous, I guess. And so that would be, you know, another instance where they've kind of, yeah, they had to balance out something that works that, yeah, is not great, you know, or at least appears to be problematic with, you know, trying to bring online something else to replace it that they also are making sure isn't going to cause other problems down the line.
Yeah. Well, and you did talk to a number of different city officials and administrators about what they ultimately decided to do, because unlike San Francisco, some Bay Area cities or counties have completely banned glyphosate. What rationale did they give you for going with a complete ban rather than a reduction in use?
Well, one of the places that was the first, among the first to ban it, even before the World Health Organization, the IARC report came out, and that was the city of Richmond. And the city of Richmond just in general has wanted to get a lot of toxics out of the environment and, you know, for numerous reasons. I mean, the city of Richmond is where the Chevron has its refinery. You know, they've had a lot of, you know, air quality issues and other things in that community. And so there is a strong push to try to reduce exposure to toxic chemicals or chemicals that are, you know, seem or are perceived as being toxic. And so Roundup and other glyphosate-based herbicides definitely fell on that list. And in talking to Tom Butt, who's the mayor of Richmond, he said that back in 2012, the city tried to adopt an integrated pest management system sort of thing, modeling it actually on San Francisco's system. And they did adopt something where they wanted to only use it in an emergency. And but the thing was, is that, you know, in the part of this is that, you know, the review, going back and reviewing and getting, you know, grounds managers to review their use every year is a pretty important part of it. And I think the city of Richmond kind of underscores the importance of that, because when these managers came back to Tom Butt and he would ask them, well, why are we still using, you know, he said, we only said you use this in an emergency. And they said, well, it was an emergency. And he said, well, everything turned out to be an emergency. So in only the way that Tom Butt, he's actually one of my favorite city officials to ever interview, because he's very straightforward. He said, yeah, everything was just an emergency. And so that was when the city council decided in 2015 that they were going to just ban the whole thing entirely. And it was over the objections of the people who maintain the grounds and parks and everything throughout the city. And so, you know, those folks were putting up pictures of all the weeds and all the trash and things. I mean, there are lots of things. There's lots of issues of dumping within the city of Richmond that have nothing to do with weeds. But at any rate, you know, Tom Butt does concede, yeah, Richmond looks really terrible, but but we're not using that chemical anymore, you know.
Yeah, right. With all these lawsuits now settling, and I'm not sure if any more studies are coming out, but with cities sort of having decided where they stand, what happens next? What do you expect to see continued change on the front of how safe glyphosate is considered to use and how widespread its use is by cities in the Bay Area?
Well, I can't speak to the latter effect. I mean, it just seems like the trend is that people are trying to find alternatives, or, you know, they're stepping back from that. But that's about all I could speak to of the you know, the cities like Novato and others that I looked at. But in terms of like the further studies, I mean, the IARC and the Health and Human Services, their toxics division, came up with a toxic profile for glyphosate. And it was sort of an all around. It looked not just at cancer, but other effects, other health effects, developmental effects, reproductive effects of glyphosate. And, you know, they said that, yeah, there are these, they found several concerns, but they couldn't come down with a definitive conclusion, say, on cancer or other things. But they said, you know, in part because there has not been a lot of research in terms of exposure levels. And so when each new study comes out, there's a sense of, well, there's the issue of we've had this lack of information. You know, and the WHO had said the same thing, that we just don't know enough about it because there aren't enough studies done on this. We need to do more studies. And that's what they called for. It's what the Health and Human Services have called for. And, you know, in response, it seems like that there's, you know, Monsanto and Bayer, you know, really try to isolate the cancer research arm of the WHO as being this outlier, as the only place that's found this issue with linking cancer, you know, glyphosate to cancer. But, you know, there's more coming out because this is such a widely used chemical. And so, you know, that's going to be something that we'll have to watch for.
Great. Well, Christy, thanks for your reporting on this, and thanks for talking about it.
All right. Well, thank you.
That was journalist Christy Cole. Read her stories at sfpublicpress.org. I'm Laura Wenis, and you've been listening to Civic.
Civic is underwritten in part by the San Francisco Foundation, which has been acting as a catalyst for change to build strong communities, foster civic leadership, and promote philanthropy in the San Francisco Bay Area since 1948. More at sff.org.